Thanks, Matt. I'm also going to be talking about the ways in which our chronic disease-focused programs connect to the clinical setting, but our programs are a little bit upstream in that process from where the diabetes prevention program is, so I'm going to offer a little bit different angle on that. And I have no relationships to disclose, maybe someday. All right, so coming back to our healthy living framework, I am speaking to the programs in the bottom left of this diagram. So this is our row of tertiary prevention, interventions designed to support people with existing chronic disease to live the healthiest life they can live in the context of having that disease. And primarily these interventions are at the individual level right now. So the first chronic disease program that the Y got involved in on a national scale is for cancer survivors. There are 14.5 million cancer survivors in the U.S. today. That number is growing because, fortunately, a lot of people are living much longer after their cancer diagnosis than survivors used to. So traditionally, this group of people was told to rest, relax, your body's been through enough, but surprise, surprise, research has shown us in the last 10 years or so that being sedentary is actually not good for cancer survivors, and physical activity offers a ton of benefits, and it's been proven to be safe for this population. So in response to that, the Y of the USA partnered with the Livestrong Foundation back in 2006 to develop an exercise program specifically for cancer survivors. And that has grown to be delivered in over 450 sites across the country today. And we're very excited that we had our first randomized controlled trial evaluating this program completed last year, and we're looking forward to that being published within the next year or so. But we definitely found some positive results, and the program was proven to be safe for survivors. We're excited about that. The program model is designed for adult cancer survivors, so 18 years old and up, any type of cancer, any gender, any length of time after diagnosis. So you could be fresh out of your diagnosis, maybe even still in treatment, or 30 years out. It's a small group program, probably most similar in format to small group personal training. We'll have 8 to 12 survivors come to the Y together. They'll each work individually with a staff member to develop an exercise prescription that is suitable to their needs and abilities, but then all the survivors are going to come and work on their exercise programs side by side at the Y. And this process is led by staff that go through a specific series of trainings to become certified Livestrong at the YMCA instructors. And those instructors also administer pre and post functional fitness assessments is not a word, and pre and post PROMIS 29 forms, if you're familiar with the NIH's form. It's a quality of life and sort of self-reported health status questionnaire. So the meetings are also, I forgot to mention, twice a week for about 90 minutes at a time for 12 weeks. And what I really want to focus on is what we see as the potential for linking this program to the clinical setting. And it already is, mostly when it comes to medical provider referrals. So the literature tells us that folks that are referred by their oncologist into this type of program are going to be more likely to go. And we've really found that borne out when we talk to wives about their number one most successful participant recruitment strategy. It is referrals from their oncologist, nurse navigator, social worker. That's number one for us. So those relationships exist. But as you can see, there's a lot of ways that this type of physical activity and the kind of emotional support that also comes out of this program can benefit the health outcomes of survivors, particularly when it comes to specific therapy goals, like, well, managing the side effects of therapy if they're in chemo or radiation or fresh out of that, but also as a great complement to their physical therapy. Physical rehabilitation for cancer survivors is becoming more and more of a focus, and so this type of program can help to be an adjunct to those services, either concurrently or subsequent to those. But the thing I want to focus on here, that's kind of this upstream thing I was talking about, is the way in which this type of a partnership can benefit the cancer centers that we're asking to refer their patients into the program. So we know the program's going to benefit their patients that they refer, but it can also be useful in helping cancer centers to meet their accreditation guidelines. For instance, the Commission on Cancer, which is one of the primary accrediting bodies for cancer centers, now requires a bigger focus on physical rehabilitation. Well, we have a complement to that. But also there's a focus now on survivorship care plans being created for each survivor when they're getting to the end of their treatment. And so certainly something like Livestrong at the YMCA won't be the only thing on that plan, but it's definitely a solid community-based resource that survivors can be referred to when they're getting to that point where all of the whirlwind of support happening during treatment is going to drop off and they're going to wonder what's next. This is one way we can help cancer centers with that aspect of things. Also, our dream is to be able to talk to health insurance companies about the way these types of programs can help them to meet their medical loss ratio. So if you're familiar with that, it's now the federal mandate that all health insurance plans spend at least 85% of the premium dollars they collect back onto services that are either claims-based direct services or prevention and wellness. So we definitely see a case for this type of program being supported by insurance companies in a way that helps them to meet that medical loss ratio mandate. So the other program that we kind of have up and running in this category right now is focused on older adults with arthritis. Arthritis, unfortunately, is a very widespread problem that has a huge impact on people's quality of life. 52.5 million people in the U.S. right now have arthritis, and that includes about half of all older adults over age 65. So an enormous number of people that are a lot of times suffering with arthritis, and we know that it's the number one cause of disability in the U.S., so there are real implications for the progression of this disease. And once again, studies show that physical activity is incredibly beneficial in helping to manage arthritis pain, delay disability, improve mobility, which promotes independence. There are a lot of benefits to low-impact physical activity, but a lot of folks with arthritis don't engage in that. So to that end, we licensed the Enhanced Fitness Program from Senior Services Incorporated, which is a Seattle-based nonprofit. This is a well-known program. It's been around for about 20 years, lots of studies behind it to show that it really does improve the health status of older adults across many dimensions. We've also seen studies that show that it saves healthcare costs. So it's a high-quality program endorsed by the CDC, endorsed by the National Council on Aging, and we were able to get the kind of national licensure agreement that Valerie spoke to earlier. And we are not the only organization that can license and run this program. Many other local organizations do. But again, using our vast network, we've been able to scale up to over 180 sites over the last 3 years. And we continue to grow that number every year at WISE across the country. So this program model is more traditional group exercise type format. Up to 25 older adults can come together 3 times a week for 60 minutes at a time. And the program length is at least 16 weeks, but many WISE offer it in an ongoing manner where people can just stay in the program for years. Because the cool thing about the program model is each 60 minutes is a really comprehensive workout, cardio, strength training, balance, flexibility, but it's designed to be very modifiable. So in the same class, you could have a very frail and deconditioned older adult who does the entire class from a chair with no weights, and then you can have an older adult who's much more fit kind of doing modifications where they're jumping around the room and they're using a ton of weight for their strength. Well, not a ton, let's be real, but enough, you know, strength where they can keep progressing their fitness status, and that can all happen within the same classroom because those classes are led by, again, instructors who go through a series of specific trainings to learn this program format and maintain fidelity to the model. And there is a standardized fitness check that is conducted at baseline and every 4 months, so we are tracking the progress that these individuals are making throughout the program. And here we see a ton of potential for this clinic to community linkage. We are still working on that medical provider referral angle of this in various different ways, but you can see that, again, this program is a great complement to a lot of the goals of therapy that folks might have in the clinical setting. So physical therapy, certainly. We know there's always a limited number of physical therapy sessions that insurance is going to pay for. So this program can help to support older adults in maintaining that progress. But also when you think about things like joint replacement surgery, what's the number one thing you need to do after you get a hip or knee replaced? Bear weight on it and move it and keep moving it so that you don't end up readmitted and having to have another surgery because your joint froze up. So if, you know, the surgeon or the physician can refer their patient after they're discharged from their joint surgery to this type of a program where they're not only getting the physical benefits but the big social component of the Y environment in this class in particular, a lot of potential there for us to help not only the patients but help providers and payers to reach their goals. So here, we're working toward making the case in terms of, you know, articulating how this type of a program can help a payer to meet their various HEDIS measures and their medical loss ratio requirements. But also when we look at value-based payment, accountable care organizations that are trying to maintain their patient population at a certain health status so that they can benefit from the shared savings that will come from that, when we look at all these different ways that we can help those Medicare patients to stay healthier, and to maintain the progress of their medical care, that could be a way that the Y could add value to what the Accountable Care Organization is doing, and hopefully in return, that ACO or other provider groups that are involved in bundled payments, which are more of a fee-for-service type thing with Medicare, it could be a really mutually beneficial partnership if we're helping those provider organizations and payers to meet their requirements and to realize those shared savings, and if they in turn support the Y, as Heather said, we've got to have sustainable funding, so we want to get to that point where they recognize our value and they're helping to pay for these programs so that beneficiaries and patients can access them. Another interesting thing that has come about with Enhanced Fitness is that we have had a lot of Ys, even at a state level, partnering with government agencies that have CDC funding and are required to use that funding to disseminate evidence-based program models. This is an evidence-based program model. When it's run in a Y, we have the ability to connect program sites across an entire state and the country, in fact, in order for those, say, a state health department that has this funding, they can have one contract with the state-level organization of Ys and end up supporting program dissemination at a bunch of sites around their state. So it's kind of a one-stop shop for those funders. So that's another neat benefit we've seen come out of Enhanced Fitness. And it doesn't end there. As Valerie mentioned, we've got the blood pressure program coming down the pike. We've got the childhood obesity program coming, and those are both going to come into this tertiary prevention portfolio. But many local Ys run this type of tertiary prevention chronic disease management support program that's not a national model, but for all these different conditions here, I can think of Ys that run programs for each of those kind of on their own. So Ys are really starting to embrace this role that they can play, and we hope to see it grow in the future. And with that, I'll hand it back over to Matt.
Thanks, Maureen. So thanks again to everybody who came first day of the conference. You know, I think there's still less people flying in based on the attendance. But thanks, everybody, for sitting through this. I think whether it's the training and the foresight that went into all the Healthy Communities initiatives to get CEOs from different parts of the country going up to Capitol Hill and advocating for things, or in state legislatures, wherever, to the kinds of experience that it's taken to deliver technical assistance to get healthy practices into childcare and out-of-school time programs, or to develop through that very methodologic way these evidence-based programs and then scale them in a very methodologic way. We're really excited about the way that this is all transpiring, and we know that healthcare providers and payers are too, because we're getting a lot of questions, a lot of different ideas thrown at us. Ys are essentially being sucked into the business of healthcare on some level. And what I just wanted to show in a closing slide here is kind of a model where Ys are, as a representative of community-based organizations, more in the middle of healthcare delivery, where these kinds of things that we've talked about today are what Ys and healthcare partners are doing together. Evidence-based programs are a part of expanded care team models, where lay health workers are delivering programs that have guaranteed, essentially, kind of outcomes, or at least guaranteed ability to track them. Randomized controlled data, the strongest you can find, saying that these programs are going to be effective. We have these national online HIPAA-compliant EMR-integrated data systems, coming online to support those evidence-based programs. That's an important part of this model of around community-integrated health. We have learned how we train Ys to be compliant with everything from HIPAA to meaningful use requirements to business contracting, and we are kind of taking that show on the road a little bit. One of the more interesting angles here that we didn't really talk about much today is in the bottom left, where Ys are building buildings with healthcare providers. Ys are becoming, in many cases, the front door of medical campuses, where on those medical campuses, physical therapy or rehab are delivered, those services, skilled nursing even, delivered by Y employees in connection with hospitals and healthcare providers, because we have a lower kind of cost structure and can disseminate things very broadly through a community. The flip side of that is also true. Ys are building buildings and inviting healthcare providers in kind of dock-in-the-box kind of operations, renting square footage out to the pediatricians on Wednesday morning and the family practitioner on Thursday afternoon, but becoming a hub for health. In the bottom right from you, no, left, sorry, I did it backwards the other way. We have wives that are helping kids get their shots, helping people get signed up for insurance, helping people get through their community to find those free mammogram opportunities, you know, and talk about preventive services with their members and with others in the community. And last but not least, as Monica talked about, gave great examples, wives are often now part of these community health needs assessments and taking what we've learned about collaboration into those conversations to serve as sometimes backbone-type organizations to implement community change. So all of these different aspects of community-integrated health is what all of these different presentations are intended to help you see how the Y and other CBOs can play a role here in determining value. And we'll take questions here for the last 15 minutes. Yeah. Please.
Could you clarify your grant, your federal CDC grant? Is that like if the YMCA applies nationally, or do you have like separate recipients? How does it get to the local level?
Both. I mean, we are one of CDC's six national grantees for the diabetes prevention program and for other types of programs. But sometimes, depending on the funding source, that they're like, it depends on sort of how the government structures it. Sometimes CDC's funding is apply the national network and then have sub-recipients. And in other instances, the funds are being driven locally, and that's
like the Community Spreading Prevention to Work,
yeah.
CPPW,
yeah.
As well as REACH.
We're locally driven.
Yeah, so there's been...
Exactly.
We're one of their six national grantees that CDC has. We have one.
Yep.
So that is 12-12. 1422 and 1305 funds went to the state. They didn't, organizations like WISE didn't apply. So it depends on their funding mechanism.
But at one point, we were holding eight different cooperative agreements between, you know, the Healthy Communities initiatives, like REACH, CTG, et cetera, as well as the DPP or Enhanced Fitness or some of these other cooperative agreements. Also a cooperative agreement with Medicare and Medicaid to prove a cost savings model to for the diabetes prevention program. So when we take on that role nationally, we're pushing the majority of those dollars out through our grant-making system, our training system, et cetera, to local Ys.
For instance, the Y of Western North Carolina was one of our enhanced fitness grantees that came from that CDC money this year, so they just started the program with that same mechanism.
Yep. Other questions?